This is ContactTalkRadio.com, consciousness in action, and you are taking action into your consciousness by tuning into Contact Talk Radio.
And on TuneIn.com, Ping.fm, and Upsnap Mobile.
Contact Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Dr. Madeira Show, where he will discuss testosterone optimization and full body health for the high-performance modern man. Now, here's your host, Dr. Madeira.
Hello, everyone. It's Dr. Madeira here, back on the Dr. Madeira Show podcast. And today we have a special guest and friend, Allie Gilbert. Allie G., how's it going today?
Hey, how are you?
Doing awesome. We finally got some sun here in Seattle, and we're out of the doom and gloom. So that's amazing for February at this time of year. And we've been talking for a while now through the social media networking and talking about ways to help men optimize their strength, endurance, sexual health, et cetera. And, you know, I'm really excited for you to share your expertise since you've been in this field for a long time and know some of the major go-to people in testosterone optimization therapy, et cetera. You want to tell the audience a little bit more about yourself before we get into the more details?
Sure. So I am not a doctor. I just play one on Facebook. So I'm one of those. I'm actually just kidding. I'm a fitness professional out of Greenwich, Connecticut, and I work mainly with men. And how did I get there is usually the biggest question. Well, I'm a golf fitness professional. So working with golfers in the New York, New Jersey, Connecticut area, you get mostly men who care about golf fitness. And then with that, I realized men don't ever go to the doctor unless something is falling off or it's an erectile issue. And they really have nobody who understands men's health at the level that they need to help them communicate best with a practitioner and to find people like you and others that I've been fortunate enough to come across. And now we have technology that we can actually talk like this and, you know, share clients and info. So I do online and in-person training and nutrition coaching, and that's pretty much it. And that's as short as, or as long as I'll make my intro, because otherwise it's just all boring stuff. And I like dark espresso and coffee. How about that?
Awesome. Yeah. We both love our coffee. Yeah, I had coffee this morning. So working on staying caffeinated in the good life in Seattle. Well, that's spectacular. I've started to work with you, and I guess we'll see what kind of transformation I undergo working
jacked.
With you. Get jacked. Get ripped.
I grew up GTL.
That's right. I mean, I grew up playing sports, but I think it's very different for people who are listening who don't have a personal trainer and they don't really know what that would look like. I mean, I speak to my clients and patients, and they, you know, they're optimizing with peptides and testosterone optimization therapy, et cetera. You know, we're working on mitochondrial health, all the, you know, the whole 10 yards and then some, but some of them don't really, maybe they don't quite understand why they would want to work with somebody like you. So maybe you can explain to them, like, what are the results that your client's getting from beginning till getting to their, you know, obviously they can continue working with you, but getting to their goals, like what kinds of things are you seeing with your clients over the years?
Sure.
Besides, so, like getting ripped, so to speak.
Yeah. So I have mostly men over 40, and, you know, guys always come to me and they say, I would like to get jacked, but I use that very loosely because get jacked means something different to everybody. And I tell them to send me a photo of somebody that they would like to look like, because when you tell a fitness professional you want to be ripped or shredded, I'm like, okay, this is a commitment. They want veins on their abs. They want a 12 pack or whatever. But most men really don't care about that stuff. They just want some abs to show. They want to feel better. They want to be able to lift heavier in the gym. They want to be able to recover and not feel annihilated and then still have enough energy for sexual activity and the ability to have sexual activity and to play with their kids and hang out with their wife at night. And then maybe they want to hit the golf ball farther, but golf fitness always yields or comes to looking better naked and, you know, wanting some of the aesthetic benefits. And I always tell people, you know, or fitness professionals, when I give talks, I say, people want mainly three things: look better naked, be able to sleep, and poop efficiently. So the first one, I can absolutely help them in the gym. The other two, that requires deeper coaching at a level that you and I can both help people, but also takes a deep dive into what they're doing the other 23 hours of the day. And I think that's how I made different from some other coaches, is that, you know, the easy part is writing the fitness program. Anybody can do that. Any trainer can write a fitness program. Writing one that will align with what you are eating and your lifestyle and convenience and all that stuff, now that's a next level type of product. So basically, I tell my guys, it's not a quick fix. If somebody wants to drop a lot of weight very rapidly, I'm not their girl. They can look elsewhere, because the metabolic issues that result from that can be very disastrous, as you've seen. And due to the increased confusion among diet culture, vegan and carnivore and keto and all this stuff, you know, the infiltration of misinformation is more than ever. And a lot of guys come to me not eating enough, and not eating enough for the activity that they're doing. So it's really taking a step back and actually getting them to train less and move more and actually eat a little bit more, which is kind of asked backwards from what, you know, mainstream marketing tells people. But my guys tend to get really great results when they follow the plan. So
spectacular. I would say one thing that maybe if somebody's worked with a health coach before, that I noticed with you right away, is that you're using technology to help people, you know, have videos for workouts, have a way to measure what people are eating as far as macro and micronutrients, which is a level that I think a lot of health coaches or coaches I've seen out there aren't getting to. And a lot of the times I see people overdosing on like protein powders, for example, or it's whey protein, when, you know, whey protein for some people's constitutions can be insulinogenic. So insulin increases rates of prostate cancer and causes obviously diabetes if you have, you know, insulin resistance for too long with metabolic syndrome. And most everybody that we see potentially has metabolic syndrome, you know, and that's why they have low testosterone. So for people that don't know what that is, you know, you have insulin resistance, you have high cholesterol, a lot of inflammation in the gut and the brain, and the mitochondria are out of whack. So the whole system just needs to get tuned up, and with the pancreas and mitochondria and the testes. So maybe we can get into like why optimizing strength and endurance with optimizing testosterone is so important for the listener, as well as what's happened. I would like to talk about what's happened more recently with lab ranges. So that from, you know, 2013 to 2017 to now 2020, because I think a lot of men still are coming to both of us and saying, you know, what we hear is, why doesn't my primary care doctor know anything about testosterone? You know, why can't they help me with getting a testosterone prescription? Or, you know, why do they tell me my hormones are normal when they're low, but in the normal range? So,
yeah, I mean, I had a guy tell me the other day, he said his endocrinologist called him and said that his test was 195 and she wanted it to be at least 300.
That's a joke.
Oh, I'm like,
that's
okay.
Total T, right? That's
yeah.
That's oof. I mean,
I was wow. Okay. Well, and she did say that if he followed what I gave him, he should see those levels go up. Now, we both know that it's very trivial. You're not going to go from 200 to 900 through lifestyle alone. And if this did not necessarily raise it to enough high enough level in her mind, 300, then TRT can be explored, which I was like, all we need is somebody on board, because, you know, with the laws and everything, I was like, we just need somebody on board, and then we can find a practitioner that you can work with who can help with the dosages and the frequency of the dosages, because we all know that if somebody prescribes testosterone, they don't necessarily prescribe it in the way that's going to be optimal for the patient. It's a very standard protocol for somebody, you know, who is, I don't know, 5'6", 250 or 6'2", 250. Like, doesn't matter. Everybody gets the same 200 milligrams a week. Have a nice day. One shot. Boom. So a lot of my guys want to explore that aspect because we all know most men will probably end up on testosterone at some point in their life. So it could only benefit them. The confusion comes with, you know, thinking it causes cancer or their practitioner thinking it causes cancer or causing heart issues or causing prostate cancer and stuff like that. And this is where, you know, we can educate people as to why they don't want to go to a GP or specifically just an endocrinologist or someone of that nature that is sick care covered by insurance for their hormone optimization. So, you know, the medical industry does not necessarily care if men are functioning optimally as a man. They just care if they're kind of functioning and not dying.
Right. So, it's there to keep you alive. It's not there to optimize your health. So,
right.
If you're not bleeding out of your butt or your face or your penis and all the labs look normal, they're fine with it and they're going to send you home because they did their job based on their training and standard of care. And that's not to say they're doing anything wrong because that's how they're trained and that's their standard of care.
Right.
And I will say, and I'm not trying to disrespect any specialists because they, you know, most endocrinologists today are specialists in diabetes. And I've looked in the greater Seattle metro area, and out of all the endocrinologists here, I think I found two or three that actually do testosterone. And I don't even know what dosage regimen they're on, because if you look at the textbooks for endocrinology going back to the 70s, they're still using those for medical schools. And they're still saying dose, you know, 1 to 200 milligrams every other week injection max. Dose. So that is typically what you see from a hospital if you're doing injections of testosterone, is 100 to 200 milligrams injected every other week if it's testosterone cypionate or testosterone enanthate. But what I've seen is when I got into this work and I was at the end of my year-long stint with a quote-unquote low-T clinic where we were churning and burning out 15 to 30 plus patients a day, 5 days a week. Oof. And I was running 2 out of 4 of their clinics myself with a staff as the only physician. So I saw a lot of labs. I saw a lot of patients in 1 year, probably thousands of labs, hundreds of patients in 1 year. And what I've seen is that I've had patients that were anesthesiologists, that were endocrinologists, that were MD urologists. And while we had a mutual respect, and I liked them as patients, they didn't really know anything about what I was doing until I taught them. So I'm not saying that to be disrespectful. I'm just sharing that for the consumer, the patients out there, that when you go out to shop around for your doctor, you need to look outside of the medical system and stop expecting insurance to try to optimize you. Insurance is just there as a liability, a partial liability into your health or sick care, actually, not even healthcare. That, I mean, basically it's false advertising that it's health insurance, it's sick care insurance.
Yeah.
And even then, just we'll move on after this, but just one quick story. I had an accident where some glass shattered in my hand and I had to go to the ER and get stitches about 5 years ago or 6 years ago now. And I had to get stitches in my thumb and it cut down to almost through my tendon in my thumb. And luckily my tendon was intact, so I still can use my right thumb because otherwise I wouldn't be able to write anymore. And that visit cost me, with great private health or sick care insurance, it cost me over $2,000. So just so people know, historically, insurance was invented for hospital employees to use hospital care that was very expensive. And this is like going back over 100 years now, roughly. And you can listen more about all that kind of stuff in episodes 1, 2, and 3 of this podcast. But essentially, when you're ready and you can work with a doctor like myself and as a team with Allie and I, you're going to get the results you want and you're going to notice your body changing in the first 2 weeks.
as long as you're compliant. And then in the, you know, 1.5 month follow-up with me and 3 month follow-up, if you're compliant, you'll notice that you're getting all the results that you want and then some. And that's typically what we see. So, as far as the lab ranges, so historically the lab ranges back in 2013, this is 2020 now, February, were in September 2013, the lab ranges at LabCorp, which is one of the biggest lab companies for blood testing in the US, was about 345, 350 on the bottom end of total testosterone up to 1250. So for total testosterone. And then in 2017, what was it? What did they drop it down to?
It was like 250 to 9 something.
Yep. So that's kind of what everybody was seeing up until recently. And yesterday I interviewed Jay Campbell and he told me that one of his friends or doctor friends told him that LabCorp just dropped the range down to less than 900, somewhere around 830-ish. And then the bottom of range is somewhere around 130 now, which is insane. So your patient who had like 150 is considered normal, which if we follow the research at 350, there's more likelihood of total testosterone at 350 of all-cause mortality, acute heart attack, stroke. Basically, you're like a walking time bomb at 350. So the fact that that doctor endocrinologist is saying that 350 is her goal is basically saying that they are fine. It would be like an eye doctor saying, you know what, you're basically medically blind, sir. You are equipped to drive a motor vehicle down the highway.
Yeah,
that's basically what they're saying. But in this instance, they're saying the hormone that makes you a man, we are basically fine with you being. If you look at castrate levels of testosterone, the adrenal glands make about 55 nanograms per deciliter of testosterone whole blood per year. And what we're seeing is that that's in castrated men, adult men, is that if you say the top of the range, the bottom of the range is now 150, is that we're fine with the body making, you know, just 100 more nanograms per deciliter whole testosterone. That's not even your free testosterone, which we need to be optimized to. And some people would argue that you just need to test free testosterone and bioavailable testosterone because that's really what matters here. And we can talk about that in a second. But basically, I mean, I had a conversation with someone on the airplane last month flying back from Montana because I have a clinic there. And they were wondering why their primary care doctor in Montana doesn't know anything about this and is fine with their testosterone being less than whatever it was, because, you know, whatever. So most men today, what they don't know is that after age 30, everybody is naturally dropping at least 1% per year. But I would say at least 80% of men age 30 and older have low testosterone. And I think other doctors in this industry would agree with that. And that's what I've heard from them as well. So, and that's what, you know, people don't know. And, you know, like when I hang out with friends and we watch like Joe Rogan announce a fight with MMA and they're like, well, Joe's on the old man juice, you know, is what they'll say. And it's like, no, he's on low dose testosterone optimization therapy. He's, you know, doing what most of us should be doing. And he's been doing it for, I think, over a decade now. I don't know all of his history, but essentially, if you're not optimized, you're at higher risk for dementia, heart attack, stroke. I mean, basically, you're not gonna be able to lift as much in the gym. You're not gonna be able to golf as hard. All the things. So, I think we've kind of opened up that can of worms and closed it now. But you have anything to add to that?
No, I think you had a good rant there.
Yeah, I like to rant.
No, I mean the at the end of the day, it's, you know, to a lot of my guys say like, well, what do I do? And I give them a list of things to bring to their doctor because I let them try. Here's a list of tests. You'll never get all of them, and that is what usually happens. And then it's, you know what? This is an investment in your health. We have to find somebody that understands it because honestly, time is money. So the headache that you're going to have going to a doctor that does not understand what you need or want, and driving to appointments and scheduling appointments and making time for those appointments, it's honestly so worth the hassle just to pay like $2,000 a year, get all this stuff done, boom. That was actually a question somebody had on Instagram, was the price of TRT monthly, which I think it's based on the delivery
method
and your insurance, right?
It depends. I mean, I don't work with insurance in my clinic. So
physicians don't.
Yeah. I mean, basically if somebody wanted to work with me and we're doing labs and everything, I mean, I would have to price it out exactly, but to work with me for a year doing like men's hormone optimization, and we're not looking at any other advanced lab testing, we're just sticking with blood tests, is about 3,000 plus the testosterone and lab testing. So the lab testing, direct lab pricing, we can test your testosterone without thyroid and adrenals for under $100, which is wholesale lab pricing. So we only need to do that about every 3 months the first year. And then after the first year, when things are tuned up, then we can go out 4 to 6 months. Depending on that person's health. I mean, if somebody's really not that healthy, then we need to have them invest more into their labs and diagnostics. So usually you want to spend about $500. You can bill it to insurance, but it's at least $500 around there to test your thyroid, adrenals, and testosterone direct lab pricing, and looking at all the pituitary hormones and everything, and, you know, prolactin. If you don't test for a prolactinoma, and someone has low T and you miss prolactinoma, that's bad. So that, for people who don't know, it's a brain tumor of your pituitary gland. And that can make you have low testosterone. And then there's a compounded medication we can use that you just dissolve in your, under your tongue or on your side of your cheek, you know, once a day or so.
Let me clarify, Sam is highly intelligent and very clinical. Just because you have low T does not mean you have a tumor.
Right. Yeah. So basically, we're not thinking like Arnold, like tumor. Like, you don't have a tumor just because you have low T. But if you are on low T and you've never checked prolactin levels, and prolactin levels are elevated, then you need to figure out why. So we can't just like take you out as a patient and say like, okay, everybody's just walking out of here with testosterone. For example, I've had a handful of patients in the last year where they had all the signs and symptoms. You can do the ADAM questionnaire online. It's like 10 questions, and it's a research-based questionnaire. And if you answer that you have low libido and weaker erections, then you have like a 100% chance based on the ADAM questionnaire that you have low testosterone. But it's not that specific or sensitive. So just because you have those symptoms doesn't mean that you have low testosterone in your blood. You could have, you know, middle range testosterone, like 600 or 700, and work on the other things that are causing the low testosterone, like autoimmune thyroid disease. So we used to think, you know, going back 10 years, that only women had autoimmune thyroiditis and that men never had it. But now it's like men are having more of this autoimmune disease. So, and that's because of our food is crap. There's tons of toxins, the air, food, and water, all the things. You know, you buy a new couch, it has flame retardants on it, et cetera, et cetera. But point being is that if you don't get a complete workup, like, we can't just take you on as a patient and like basically like load up a gun and just shoot everybody up with testosterone. Like, that's not how this works. I think a lot of guys just, they have a conversation with you or me and they may think, you know, we're just going to load everyone up with T and then we're done, like a low T clinic. I wish it weren't that easy.
I mean, I tell them, even if they go on testosterone, they're still going to have to be compliant with the lifestyle interventions. So it will help you. It'll increase your muscle mass, which will help you last longer in bed and in the gym, but you're not lasting longer in bed because of muscle. But basically it's going to give them the ability to feel better and like they did as if they were younger. So it's not a magic pill. you know, we've kind of beat the dead horse of all the supplements that you buy at Vitamin Shop or GNC that claim to be like Testo Booster 9000. Do not work. So it really is, you know, finding out exactly, you know, what's going on with you as a specific person. So that was an amazing tangent off of how much does TRT cost a month.
Yeah. I would say the short answer for that person is if you go to a clinic and they say it's only going to cost $99 per month, get ready to walk out paying $800 a month and getting completely taken for your money and sold. You're going to be sold everything under the sun and that you may or may not need. And they're trying to make a lot of money off of you, those bigger clinics. And that's not how I function. Usually people I'm working with right now, I have patients that are in their second or third year, fourth year of testosterone. And it's like, they can get everything, including labs, including their testosterone for like $150 a month, and then every 3 months they maybe spend like $100 to $200 on their medications, depending, and that's 15 weeks worth of medication. So, you know, it's like they're spending less than $2,500 for the whole year, and that includes everything typically. Granted, typically what men don't understand as much as women is that there can be other things that are the root cause issue that you're working on simultaneously. And that's where things can get a little bit more of an investment. So, you know, if you want to use peptides with testosterone, that's going to be more of an investment. So some of the peptides, one of the peptides that's going away at the end of next month, this is February now, at the end of March, tesamorelin will be gone, thanks to the lovely FDA. So basically that, from memory, is $800 a month for that peptide. And you're injecting 5 days a week before bed, 2 days off. And then you do that for 10 weeks and then at least 2 weeks off. So you cycle on and off, but that will be gone soon. So that's not even really a conversation point anymore by the time this podcast is out. But basically, I would be buyer beware of the low T clinics. If you're bargain shopping, you're going to run into some sketchy people. So next question.
Kind of there's actually a question that one of my friends had asked. So he was saying, you know, is there a preferred testosterone to estrogen ratio for body composition? And I said, obviously it's different with everybody, but the specific situation he was talking about was, client has T levels of 700 and his estrogen's 35, which is kind of like the mid range of like a guy could feel really great on, or can kind of feel like death. His inquisition was that is his estrogen might be too low. So I was like, all right, well, does he have hair loss? Maybe it's shuttling down, you know, the 5-alpha pathway. Like, you know, maybe it's bound up. We need more data. And I was like, well, what's his dosage and frequency? And it's less than 100 milligrams once a week. So
yeah, it's too low. I mean, if you're only getting 700. Oh yeah, go ahead.
Hold on. So that brings up the question now where people think that there's a magic number that they're supposed to feel a certain way. And I said, listen, labs are just a snapshot in time, especially with estrogen. Like, you have guys that feel amazing on estrogen of 100. You have guys that feel amazing on estrogen of 20. So in your opinion, you know, what happens when, you know, someone's presented with this where they can obviously use a higher frequency of dosage and a higher dosage overall, and then maybe their testosterone's 1400 and then their estrogen goes to 50 and they feel absolutely amazing? Because there are doctors that will freak out at a test level of 1400 for no other reason than the fact that the sheet of paper says 1400.
So, yeah. So
what is the plan there for somebody? Do they have to find another practitioner, or, you know, cause it's like, they can't bring me in the office to be like, dude, come on, let's up the dose. There's only right. So many doctors that will listen to me on that.
Well, I combine labs with how my patients are feeling. So that's why you want to have a good conversation with them and say, you know, what's going on? Like, are you having good, strong erections? Are you having morning erections? If you're not having morning erections, the dose is not high enough. you know, if they're having signs of like acne on their back or shoulders, the dose is too high, or they're shunting it down the 5-alpha pathway too much. And you can do a Dutch urine test and see if they're shunting down that 5-alpha pathway too much. And then you can use some herbal medicines and zinc and things like that to help that while using topical things for the acne. But back to the question of 700 total testosterone, I assume it's total, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I didn't get a free number. I didn't get SHBG.
Okay. So we have 700 total testosterone, and hope, you know, I'm assuming that this person's blood was taken at the right time with their method of administration, whether it's injection or topical cream with on the scrotum. So let's assume all of that is correct. And then we have their estrogen is 35 picograms per deciliter serum blood. So they're at a 20-to-1 ratio of total testosterone estradiol. Their ratio is okay. You know, we want at least a 10-to-1 ratio of total testosterone to estradiol. And you want ultra-sensitive estradiol. So if you're not having ultra-sensitive, yeah, so that's another issue. The estrogen's probably a little bit higher. And some labs are now flagging estrogen when it goes above about 39 picograms per deciliter or 40. I stand with the camp that believes there's no known optimal estrogen level when men are on testosterone optimization therapy. So it used to be back in, you know, 2013 through about 2015-ish, 2016 even, that everybody was saying, we're going to use AIs, anastrozole, Arimidex, same medication, different names, aromatase inhibitors to block the conversion of aromatase taking testosterone into estrogens, estrone and estradiol, so E1 and E2. And now we're saying that has caused a lot of issues, that has caused bone mineral density problems, that is, you know, 40-something-year-old men who are completely ripped and jacked and they're top of their health on testosterone therapy with AIs were falling down and fracturing hips and things. So a lot of people have stopped using AIs. They also are toxic to other parts of your body. So you can read Jay Campbell's TO2 Bible. You can talk to more people, read the research. But the range that we used to go by, that's the backstory. So the range we used to go by is 20 to 32, roughly, for estradiol in the blood. And now what I tell people is it has to be above 20. And this is what pretty much everybody in this industry agrees on, is that it has to be above 20. Once you get below 20, people get wacky symptoms. They can start actually having less erections. They decrease bone mineral density. It's bad for men to have low estrogen.
Yeah.
I know that sounds weird to some people maybe, but it's like women need a little bit of testosterone. Men need a little bit of estrogen. You know, you got the yin and the yang here. So we need that balance. Otherwise, we don't have healthy bones, healthy heart, healthy sexual health. And then the top of the range, there's no agreed upon top of the range. So if somebody is using testosterone therapy and they have no adverse symptoms and no, you know, mood swings, they're not retaining water, which is very rare, by the way. They're not having any other issues like sexual health problems or anything like that with testosterone therapy, and their estrogen's 85, their estradiol is 85 with ultra-sensitive testing, that's fine. You know, like let it ride. I think I'm a little more conservative than some people. I usually say 20 to 80, but then you want to obviously check in with the patient. And I agree 100% with what you said. Labs are like a photograph in time. So now all of our photographs are digitalized, but I take it back to like the 90s and 80s and before them when we all had photo albums. And it's like looking at a lab test is looking at a photo that you just took. Like a Polaroid, right? It's developed, it's there. You can take another one tomorrow and things will be a little bit different, but it's still you, it's still your biology.
Oh yeah, 100%. I equate it to like someone who's, you know, going for a one rep max. If you don't know the weight, it's not going to affect you. So, it's like, you have to explain to some phlebotomist sometimes what the hell an ultrasensitive test is. So I don't even bother anymore. I'm like, just don't worry about estrogen. You kind of go off like their symptoms. Cause then if they see it in red, which it's going to be usually even when they start TRT, because, you know, you're finding that happy place, then they can't stress about it and then have all these practitioners send them out the door with their Remedex and stuff like that. So I think, you know, obviously it comes down to, obviously diet and exercise are a big part of that, but I don't think the ratio matters so much as what the symptoms are and, you know, what the person feels and what they're doing outside of the gym as well.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, if you are going to a clinic and you're getting testosterone, HCG, and Arimidex or anastrozole right out the door, run.
Yes. Starter kit.
That's what everybody's getting there. And that's how I got into this. And that's what the clinic that I worked at was doing. And then they got into pellet therapy and I ran for the hills. And first I butted heads with everybody there because I'm a loud mouth and, you know, I'm not a follower, I'm a leader. So I'm not going to sit around and be beaten into submission into unethical practices. So that's why I have my own practice, in case people were wondering. But it was never the end all goal, but here we are. So if that's what you're getting right off the bat, I would question it. I don't practice once it's size fits all medicine. With that said, here are the things that I see over and over again in lifestyle that increase estrogen for men. Stop drinking IPA beers. If you want to have a hard erection and have great sex life, just stop those, or at least make it like a once a month thing, if that, in moderation. Cut back on alcohol. So, you know, I don't know, I don't really trust this study, but at Harvard, they say 10 to 14 drinks a week. I would say at least 2 to 3 consecutive days off a week of alcohol and keep it to 1 to 2 drinks a day on the days you are drinking. And then if you're going to go off the deep end, then you've got to say, okay, well, I had my 10 drinks in 2 nights. And what is that doing to your body? But coffee also jacks up estrogen when you go over like 2 to 3 cups of coffee, depending on your aromatase is a genetic input because it's an enzyme, and enzymes are built off of proteins that come from our genetics, telling us how much aromatase we should make. So different people have different aromatase amounts in their body. But stress is number
one.
Body
fat increases that. Body fat increases aromatase. Yep. So the best thing you guys can do to increase your test levels is drop body fat. So nutrition and gym, I mean, it's like, I feel like I get paid for like some proprietary solution that really is just basic shit. Like go to sleep, go in the gym, walk around, move shit. Like, I don't know, I'm cursing.
Lift up. Heavy things.
Yeah.
Get a little bit more primal instead of, you know, get away from the tech, get more primal.
Yeah.
Get into the animal self. Like, I think a lot of us are so stressed out that we're, you know, we're sitting behind computers and cell phones 90% of the day and we haven't walked outside to breathe fresh air and throw things around. You know, I think of like, if you watch boys playing in the woods, it's like, they're throwing sticks and rocks and like breaking things. And, you know, if you
I'm
have a lot of
you off, don't go watch Boys in the Woods. Cause that's a whole, that's something you might get arrested for.
Oh yeah. Well, you know what I mean? Yeah. Don't do that. But if you have kids and you have boys and you watch how they play, they have high testosterone and they're, you know, they're rough. And I think a lot of us have been softened up by this technologically tech rich culture where it's like, you know, we don't have callous hands anymore as men most of the time, unless you're lifting weights or working in the woods or, you know, unless you do manual labor. So the point being, lift some heavy things, but stress is jacking up men's testosterone. So what are you doing with that stress? Are you getting that energy out in the gym? Do you have a punching bag in your garage? Like, how are you going to get this out in a healthy way versus sedating yourself and tuning out over a 6-pack of beer? So I think that's the main point there. So we got the right ranges. Everybody now should be, you know, looking to be at least 750, 800 and higher. If you're at 735 for testosterone and estrogen, you're on testosterone therapy, I would increase the dose. And then you could use like brassica vegetables and DIM and stuff like that to try to optimize the estrogen metabolism. Because it's not so much the whole estradiol number, it's what the metabolites are becoming. And then those nasty estrogen metabolites, those inflammatory estrogen metabolites can provoke
the development of prostate cancer. So I'm not trying to scare the hell out of people, but prostate cancer and skin cancer are the top two cancers for men, and they're on the rise. Number two cause of death in the US is cancer. So if you can eat more cooked broccoli, cauliflower, you know, there's like cauliflower pizza crust now. I mean, this is really easy today, folks. When I was trying to eat a whole foods diet and learn how to do that 21 years ago, it was like nothing was available like this. If you're in any major town or city, you can eat gluten-free. You can eat more healthy. If you're in Montana, you can hunt, or you can go get all grass-fed beef now. It's a lot easier than it used to be, unless you're in like the middle of nowhere in middle earth or something, wherever. Hopefully that's not you. But what else are the other questions we had for the listeners?
Someone asked about diet fads, I think, in the fitness industry, which is a very broad question, but I mean, I have a 4-hour talk on that. So to condense, you know, into a very short thing, I would say the short answer is I would encourage you to find eating in a way that is a way that you can do the rest of your life. And whether or not you're trying to cut weight or increase weight, it still has to be foods you like. It has to be foods that you can get into your daily routine every day. And it's got to be something that is easy to stick to. So if that happens to be, you know, one of the popular diets that's kind of going away again is keto. If you want to do keto, I will happily educate you on the pros and cons, but also bring to light the fact that you will be ingesting mainly oil and butter as your form of fat. And if you're okay with that, but if you're going to be doing an activity like CrossFit, it's going to end up being a disaster for you. So I would say, because people get so confused and people just want to be a part of something, and that's why they identify with a certain diet and say they do a certain diet, that's all well and good. I encourage everyone to experiment, but just understand what the ramifications of your experiment can be, because you're different metabolically and unique metabolically than I am, than Sam is, than your friend is. So please do not let the influence of your friend who lost 42 pounds in 7 days, you know, be someone to pressure you into trying what they did, because that does not mean it'll work for you. So, you know, it's hard to segue off that to answer that type of question, but I'm assuming that's what he meant with that. And I deal with that a lot, because I have a lot of people who come to me who lost weight quite rapidly, and now they're dealing with the aftermath. So I fix a lot of what other coaches mess up, and it's, you know, I'm not dissing other coaches in the sense. I think there's a lot of people who identify as a nutrition coach and necessarily aren't qualified, because anybody can starve somebody once, but it's really, if you're going to lose weight, what is the plan for after that? What is the plan for the year after? You know, I don't care about the 3-week transformation photo. I care about the year after that and how that person has sustained that fat loss. So we don't have a weight loss problem in America. We have a weight regain problem, and we have not been able to help people maintain that. So my process at the least is 3 months, at the most as many years as you want to be with me. And there's a reason for that. So it's not a quick fix, because I do not want you to experience the yo-yo of the same 10 pounds over and over and over, which is actually more detrimental to your fat loss efforts than anything else. So.
Great answer. I think that's a great synopsis. And I'm just going to throw you a curveball question on top of that same subject line. So should I go and fast for like 24 hours and then go do a deadlifts?
Probably not.
That was kind of a rhetorical question, but on a similar note, intermittent fasting is still really popular and has been for years now. Yeah. What are your thoughts around intermittent fasting for somebody that wants to increase muscle mass?
So fasting, my prerequisite for somebody to fast. All right. Why do you want to do it? Because it does not have magic fat loss or muscle gain capabilities than any other way of restricting calories. But does it have benefits from a cellular level? Yes. However, it has to be fasts that are extended beyond a day. And if anything, I think if somebody doesn't understand their hunger signals, so people who are sedentary tend to have mixed hunger signals than somebody who's active all day. So to understand what true emotional hunger is versus physical hunger, I will say, let's try a 24-hour fast for that reason, to become comfortable with being hungry so that you understand fat loss and dieting. You have to be a little bit hungry, but is it emotional or is it physical? And you want that physical hunger. If you are somebody who cannot go a very long time without eating everything in sight, I don't think fasting will be a good approach for you. And if you're somebody who eats, you know, a bagel and then you fall asleep right away, fasting's probably something that could help you get a little bit more flexible with your metabolism, but it's not the best approach if fat loss is what you're going for. I think people need to establish consistency first. And if they want to fast because it provides them structure, which I think people crave and they need, and that's why they want meal plans, then yeah, go for it. But if you're fasting under the impression that you think it's going to provide you rapid fat loss in a certain amount of time, it's not. It just forces you to control your calories a certain way. That's my approach with it. I don't have anybody who does it other than for the feeling empty because they want to, or to just kind of relearn that pattern of hunger signals. If anything, I have a few guys that like to fast when they fly, which I agree with because you're not doing anything when you're flying. Plus the pressure in the intestines, you don't digest food well. Plain food is disgusting. So is even in first class or if you're getting it from the airport. So that's my little summary on fasting.
Yeah, I agree with not eating when you're flying and don't drink the coffee because that stuff has never been cleaned out. I think there was like some airline stewardess that did a YouTube video about how they don't ever clean out the coffee pot. So that's pretty gross and probably full of mold mycotoxins, which are not good for your hormones, gentlemen. So things to consider. I know it gets some, for some people, all of this stuff is like, wow, this is so much information. And, you know, how do we integrate it all? And, you know, I think that's why it's good for people to work with someone like you and to get this nuanced information answered for them. And if they do need more direction and structure, that you can offer that for them and guide them through. And I think a lot of men that work with me when I explain, hey, you know, you're going to work with like a lifestyle coach and they're going to work with you with training and things like that, I think a lot of them are used to doing everything themselves, except for cooking their own meals, because most guys don't cook their own meals. Basically, you know, there's this certain kind of like bravado, even when men are sick because they're not bleeding from their abdomen dying because they were shot or something like that. Like they still think, well, I can do it all on my own. But I think when people are really willing and ready, that's when you're going to get, that's like the magic touch right there. That's the magic, you know, desperation is on your side. So, you know, if someone's ready to optimize fully and you're not going to like stiff arm us and you're ready to go all the way, that's when you want to work with someone like us. But if you're like, oh, I can do it all on my own and I'm going to biohack myself into like living to 200 years old, have at it, you know, good luck.
Yeah. And I mean, I'll throw in too that like, I have a coach who I've had almost 2 years now because I hate writing my own programs and I really don't have the objective view for dieting that I do that he does. So, and I'm now 7 weeks out from my wedding, dieting on over 200 grams of protein and the most food that I've ever had in my life. I weigh 5 pounds more than my leanest last summer and I'm more ripped. So whatever, this shit works. And you know, the fact that you are willing to work with a coach too, like doctors don't doctor themselves, just like fitness professionals, we don't fitness professional ourselves. So you know, having a team where my guys come to me and I can handle the lifestyle stuff. And they're like, oh, I don't need a life coach. I'm like, that's not what I do. So when you say stress, it's like, yeah, there's habitual things about stress that guys don't, or people in general don't know how to do. Like, we don't know how to go to bed anymore. We don't know what that ritual is like. We don't know when to put the phone down. We don't know what good sleep is like, how to track it. What should we do? How should we train? So I modify the training program based on your stress levels, based on your travel, based on, you know, how much you're eating. you have to match the energy intake to the output. Otherwise, you're going to really screw somebody up. It's not like, here's a workout, have a nice day. And then they're obviously going to want to understand what their history is from a heart history perspective, because a lot of men have that. Diabetes. They're on statins. They're on things that they want to get off of. They're on the Adderall Ambien cycle because they're, you know, Wall Street CEOs. Like, I work with a lot of those guys. So being able to team up with a practitioner such as yourself and be like, listen, we're going to get labs done. We're going to find the full picture. It just gives a in-depth approach to somebody's health. So the more data that we have, the better, which actually prompts me to ask you. So a lot of my guys, when their cholesterol hits 200.5, they get handed a statin by their doctor. Can you please summarize why statins are not helpful and why they can be extremely destructive to somebody's health? Because it's usually the statin with the vegan diet care package that they're sent out the door. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a recipe for disaster for your brain health and mitochondrial health. So the mitochondria, if you don't know already, are the powerhouse of your cell. So that's making all of your ATP, that's helping you make all of your testosterone, all of your hormones. Most of your mitochondria is in your brain and your heart. So if you're concerned about heart health, statin medications, if you truly don't have like a 300 total cholesterol and 260 is brain protective. So you need a certain amount of cholesterol in your brain, in your body to make your hormones. Because that's where you get pregnenolone, and then pregnenolone is basically the reservoir of grandma hormone where you get all of your other hormones. So if you're concerned about brain health, if you're concerned about anxiety or all this sleep stuff you were just talking about and stress with work, and you have low cholesterol, you're adding insult to injury. Also, statin medications, as mentioned, so they're bad for your mitochondria. They're a mitochondria toxin. That's why you need to take CoQ10. So if you're taking a statin medication, get a very high quality CoQ10 supplement and take that with healthy fat because it's fat soluble. Second of all, about 30 years ago, 20 to 30 years ago now, the total cholesterol range used to be 220. So for me, if my patients don't have a family medical history of cardiovascular disease and they know their family medical history, because some people are adopted or whatnot, or they just don't know because their parents never told them what was going on with their health, which is very common, then you basically, you know, if you don't have those risks, we can do other genetic tests around cardiovascular health, like an ApoE genotype test, LP little a. These are things that we can do together for cardiometabolic health. But the short answer is it's toxic for your brain, it's toxic for your heart, and it's toxic to all your mitochondria. So you have to take CoQ10. If you have like 300 or 275 total cholesterol, and your other things like your LDL cholesterol is through the roof, and your NMR has been tested, and these lipofractionated lipids and these advanced cardiovascular tests are all lit up in the red zone, then, you know, we might need to do a statin while you work with Ali and clean up your diet and your lifestyle for 3 to 6 months. And then you can come off that statin. But to be on a statin for years and years, usually if you change your lifestyle, and this is even how medications were created, was for you to be on them for about 3 to 6 months and change your lifestyle and then come off of them. And we don't have the longitudinal studies for somebody on 4 to 6 medications like most people in this country are over age 50. So these things can be very toxic and bad for your hormones. And if you have low testosterone and you're on a statin, that's probably why, or one of the many reasons why, as well as your sleep. So that's my answer. It's toxic. Yeah, it's no good. I got a question for you, and then maybe we can see if there are any other questions coming through Instagram. But so can you explain to me why? So last year I did like a 3.5 month trial of CrossFit in downtown Seattle near where my clinic is. Mm-hmm. And I actually did it so that I could speak to CrossFit for my clients more, not because I'm down with CrossFit. And I don't say that to throw anyone under the bus that is, but from my research, doing a CrossFit type workout that
basically you don't have any rest in between reps. It's you may be lifting heavy weight and then doing a lot of running or burpees, which are just bad for your neck and shoulders. And that's how I injure myself, is doing timed burpees and jump rope and some other things. But one of my shoulders was injured. And luckily I know how to do prolotherapy, so I was able to inject my own shoulder, but the lay person wouldn't have those skills. So a lot of people are getting injured in CrossFit today, but for their hormone health, these high intensity interval training workouts that are like CrossFit or Orange Theory or these other places, can you explain to the listeners why that's not going to be helpful for their metabolism and hormones like cortisol, adrenal hormone, and testosterone?
Oh, yeah. So I was discussing this the other day with some colleagues that, you know, the pendulum swings various directions in the fitness industry. And right now we're still kind of in the high intensity interval training is life mode. When CrossFit broke out, it kind of popularized that. And it also made Olympic lifting popular and lifting heavy popular, especially for women, which I think is awesome. And there's a lot of good attributes to what it offers from a camaraderie perspective and just introducing people to alternative types of training besides the Globo gym. But when you're doing high intensity all day, every day, it really suppresses your body's ability to kind of keep up with you in a sense. So, you know, if you're not eating enough to supplement the type of training that you're doing, and a lot of this actually stemmed from when CrossFit and Paleo had a baby, you really couldn't eat enough sweet potatoes to supplement the type of training that they're doing. So we saw all these metabolic issues happening. Now, you know, we've gotten away from just straight strength training. And I think I was talking to you about this, is people love kettlebell circuits and they love to sweat and they love the high intensity circuits and they love how short and quick they are, which is absolutely applicable in the right situation, just not all the time. So being, you know, a society of extremes, oh, if one high intensity session's good, all of them might be better. Just like, oh, 200 milligrams caffeine, hey, let's go to 800 milligrams. That's got to be better. So the more is better concept is what's ruling here. So the body will just not prioritize procreation or anything other than keeping you alive when we're just pounding it with overtraining and we're not resting enough. Now it's different. Like I've had elite level CrossFitters where this is their sport. They have to do burpees. They have to do things in competition. So they have to be at the top level of their game. Those athletes I've had eating 3000 plus calories, and you have to understand that that's what they're training for. And that's completely different. Now, a lot of their training involves non-CrossFit activities as well, but you know, we're talking about general population here. So a lot of it kind of reminds me of when people say, oh, I got to start running and then I'll get into the gym. Whereas running, you know, you run on one foot at a time. So all your body weight, that force is about 6 to 8 times your body weight on one leg at a time. So it's basically you're hopping on one leg, which is a plyometric or explosive exercise. And you're doing it with 6 to 8 times the force of your own body weight, which is basically very, very, very heavy strength training. So if 1 mile is 1500 reps of that much weight, I'm not sure where the thinking that, you know, that's getting in shape for the gym is coming from. You actually have to get more in shape to run. So if you want to do CrossFit, I absolutely have no problem with people wanting to try that, or, you know, any class that can supplement their strength training, but you have to get strong. You absolutely have to get stronger. And we've gone away from like just straight deadlifting and doing like 5x5 or, you know, sets of 8 with 2 to 3 minutes rest. People don't have the attention span like they used to. So it's like, oh, I got to rest. What am I doing now? What am I doing now? And it's like, yo, if you're taking less than 30 seconds rest sometimes, that could be an issue. You could be injured from that. And it's affecting the energy system that we're trying to target. And I think when you were talking about certain health coaches taking a different approach when it comes to understanding macronutrients and training, is this is really where the game changer is with people, that you have to understand biochemistry. And if you understand biochemistry and where energy is made and things like glycolysis and glycogenolysis and lipolysis and lipogenesis and you know, gluconeogenesis, all those things that we had learned, then you know, as a fitness professional slash nutrition coach, oh, this is why I will use carbs here. This is why I'll use fats here. And I can tell you the reasons why, because this is what the person's doing for training based on their rest periods, that this is the fuel source they're going to have. When someone gets in trouble is when they haphazardly add a lot of exercise at the same amount of calorie intake, maybe not enough carbohydrates because people are afraid of them. And then they end up injured, or they end up losing their period if they're a woman, or they end up losing their erection if they're a guy, and they just feel overall malaised. So that's the shortest I could get that out.
That was awesome. Yeah, I like that. I like that explanation. And I mean, what I've seen, the long and short of it, is high intensity interval training is great to burn out your adrenal glands. And most erectile dysfunction isn't, it's not just your testosterone from your testes, it's your adrenal hormones too. So people are burned out at work, and then they'll go to do a high intensity interval training. And like you're saying, they're not eating right, and they're not eating the right macronutrients, and they don't have any like herbal medicines on board for adrenal health and things like that. And this is a huge problem for their health. And they're completely burning out their thyroid, adrenals, and reproductive hormones, like you're saying. So they're not able to get an erection, or if they're a man, or women, they're losing their menstrual cycle if they're of childbearing age. So usually we say if you have adrenal fatigue, we used to call it adrenal fatigue, now it's called hypothalamus pituitary adrenal axis deficiency, HPA axis deficiency, or dysregulation. So what we're seeing here is that is getting completely wrecked even more if you're doing tons of HIIT training. Also, HIIT training is better for growth hormone than it is for testosterone. And those 5x5 or 3x5 heavy lifts are better for a burst of testosterone, is what we've seen in the research. But I like what you said about the wait time in between those reps. Like, what, how many minutes would you typically recommend the average person who's getting into coaching with you to take between sets? So if, for example, if I'm doing like a 5x5 deadlift tomorrow, how many minutes should I wait if I'm not failing on the lift? How many minutes should I wait?
5x5, like, so a lot of it depends on the goal. So let me give an example of a guy I have doing a strategic strength peaking program. Basically, he has one day where he does max effort lifts. So a lot of people try to PR every day. Don't recommend that. Neurologically, your body can't handle that. And then he has a day 72 hours later that he does kind of 70% of what he did for his max effort on Monday. This is kind of what a West Side template would look like. But then thrown in there, I have him still doing, you know, strength work and power work with what I would call like power building. So you get some hypertrophy work, which is building muscle, which is a little bit higher rep, like 10 to 12. So for the heavy compound lifts, like, you know, if he's doing a max effort day, he's taking like 3-4 minutes in between. That's a long day. Most people are probably not on a max effort day, but they'll do something hybrid. So usually it's like up to 2 minutes in between each set. And then when they get into their muscle building hypertrophy work, it's more like 30 seconds to a minute. Because like you mentioned, those heavy lifts, they're going to yield a very great testosterone response. And then the other stuff, which we call like pump work, is more of a growth hormone response. And that actually helps recovery, the more growth hormone you can produce. So then it's also producing cortisol, which we do want high during training, but we don't want elevated all day. And when you can get hormonal soup, as I call it, with cortisol, you know, IGF-1, growth hormone, testosterone, it's a great fat burner. So you can still get the aesthetic byproduct of just simply weight training. And I tell people they really don't need to cardio their life away. I mean, 7 weeks out, and I'm treating my wedding like competition. Like I tell them, I told my coach, I'm like, yo, I want to be dick skin lean. I want to have veins on my abs. No one's going to see my abs on wedding day. But I don't care. I want, like, you know, to look like that because it gives me something to work for. And they just added 2 hours of cardio a week next week, which is 6 weeks out. Most people are doing 2 hours of cardio a day. I actually lift and I walk a lot. You get a lot more benefit from just lifting and walking. Even though high intensity feels good, I'll sprint maybe once every 10 to 15 days, like, or when I feel like it. Right now, I don't really have a high enough calorie amount to get a very intense sprint session. So I do a little bit lesser intense run 2 days a week. So it's really the less is more principle if you're doing the right thing in the weight room when you're lifting weight, because your body doesn't really know the difference between the actual weight lifted and the time that you're putting it under tension. And that's why hybriding real heavy stuff, pulling off the ground, pressing, benching, squatting, and then with some of the accessory work like seated rows or dumbbell rows, shoulder presses, like stuff like that. So I forget what the question was, but I think
awesome. Yeah, I think we're trying to get people off of this HIIT training cycle where they're wrecking their joints and they're, you know, they're running too much and the, you know, the constant cardio, as Mark Sisson from Primal Blueprint book and the Primal Lifestyle calls it. And I, you know, that's kind of where I came from, because I was in high school, I was running cross country in the fall. And then I was doing lacrosse in the spring and rowing crew, and they would just run us into the ground for all of those sports. So, I mean, that's just the template of exercise for those sports, is you just run a ton. And that's not good if you're doing that for the rest of your life. You know, if you look at pictures of people who are triathletes versus people who are running a little bit, like Ali's saying, it's a big difference between their body composition. And if you took their labs and their hormones, you would see that they were pretty low in all of their hormones. What is, what were some other questions you had from Instagram, if any, and then we can move along to
the other questions were literally versions of the ones we already covered. So
we already covered. Yeah. Okay. Awesome. Well, I think we covered it for the most part for everybody. Well, how can people reach you if they are ready to dive in deep and do the awesome work that you do?
Ali-Gilbert.com, AliGilbert.com. And then on Instagram, the Ali Gilbert. Same on Twitter, but I never really go on there. And then Facebook. Right. So probably Instagram is probably the most active. Yeah. And then I'm sure I'm getting married in 6 weeks, so I'll probably keep my name for professional reasons, but I may surprise you guys.
We never know. 2020 is a roller coaster. We'll see. Awesome. Well, this has been spectacular, and I look forward to collaborating more in the future. And everybody should follow you on Instagram, the Ali Gilbert. On Instagram, if you're on Instagram, and if you're not on Instagram, get on Instagram. Awesome. Well, I just want to thank you so much. I think we covered a lot more than expected, so you may want to listen to this twice, people. Please share with your friends and family. We're keeping the podcast ad free, and we're hoping if you're listening on iTunes, Spotify, etc., please give us a 5-star review so more people can find us and hear about us. All right, we're going to sign off for the day. Take care of yourselves. Until next time. Bye.
Thank you.
Now here's for my mandatory disclaimer. This is a medical information podcast and is only for general information purposes. It does not substitute or constitute the practice of medicine or any medical practices, including the giving of medical advice to any individual. And please observe that no doctor-patient relationship has been formed here. This medical podcast offers health, hormone, fitness, and nutrition information, and is designed for educational purposes only. You should not rely on this information as a substitution for, nor does it replace professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. If you have any concerns or questions about your health, you should always consult with a physician or other healthcare professional. Do not disregard, avoid, or delay obtaining medical or health-related advice and appropriate treatment from your healthcare professional. Users should seek the care of their physician or healthcare professional for any such conditions. The use of any information provided on this podcast is solely at your own risk. The contents and topics of this podcast have not been evaluated by the FDA nor approved by any other government or official body. The topics and content covered is not intended to diagnose, cure, or prevent any disease or disorder of any kind. Developments in medical research may impact the health, fitness, and nutritional advice that appears here on the podcast in the future episodes. No assurance can be given that the advice contained in this podcast will always include the most recent findings or developments in medicine with respect to the particular material covered. If you are in the United States and think you are having a medical or health emergency, call your healthcare professional or 911 immediately. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to hearing your feedback and looking forward to have you on future podcasts. Thank you.